Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You're listening to Real Adventures for Club Marine. Get peace of mind with Club Marine Boat Insurance.
It's now time for All Aboard for Club Marine. Get flexible cover for your jet ski, boat, motor and trailer, plus your gear, all in one policy, clubmarine.com.au. Andrew Hart, Hardy from Hook, Line and Sinker joins us this morning. Hardy, thanks for your time, mate.
All aboard, boys. How are we?
We're going well. Now, it'd be rude not to say I'll favourite half of Hook, Line and Sinker, wouldn't it? We said it last time with Nick. We gave him that, so we'll say it this.
I don't think you've ever had mate on. It's always Nick this, Nick that, Nick this, you know. So, look, I feel very humbled and honoured.
It's because he normally blocks my calls, Patrick.
Well, he refers to himself as the member, so.
Yeah, well, he certainly is the member. He's the member of the upper house, Tasmania down here, and far too important now to be seen with smelly fishermen.
Hey, let's chat about your trip. You've obviously travelled extensively for Hook, Line and Sinker, but you've completed a fascinating trip for a recent Hook, Line and Sinker series. You took your bar crusher up north, the eastern seaboard. You had some fascinating fishing there. Now, it's one thing to host a fishing show, but to actually take your own boat and travel up around Australia, that's another thing entirely.
Yeah, it's a good way of doing it because you sort of get to see it all. You do spend a few miles in the car, and to be honest, you probably drive past a few fish because you've only got, you know, a limited time that you can go and be on the road filming. So you've sort of got to pick your destinations quite wisely. But look, one of the biggest reasons we did it last season, and we've certainly done it in the past, is because we live in Tasmania, which at this time of year is, you know, the best state in the world. There's nowhere you'd rather be. But in another sort of 3 months from now, it's not so good and it's cold and it's just nice to get north. So it ticks all the boxes. You know, we're able to put some exposure onto our sponsored boats and our sponsored cars by using them in the environment they're meant to be used. And, you know, go fish these wonderful places. So, you know, we started from Melbourne where we picked up a new bar crusher and over the course of about 18 months ended up in Darwin, you know, via Cooktown. So it was a pretty epic trip.
It's one thing to have a centre console in Tasmania.
Yes, that's another thing.
It's another thing to have a beautiful bar crusher 730 and take that around Australia into really why it's built for the top end with, you know, 30 plus degrees every day. Talk us about the boat, the build process for that, and then how you found that, you know, taking that up north, because it really is built for those sort of climates where it's just all around fishability and, you know, you're able to cast from the front deck. You can catch tuna at the back. You can chase billfish. It's a beautiful vehicle.
It's probably the most versatile bar crusher we've owned. We've actually got it back down here in Tassie now. I was out on it this morning catching kingfish and flathead. But you're right. It is built for those northern climbs. I think the thing that really hit it home for me was that I was doing a fair bit of stuff out from sort of Cairns, out from Port Douglas, out from Cooktown fishing the Barrier Reef. Now, to get out there, you know, you need a decent boat because it's sort of 20, 30 mile across pretty crappy, choppy water, even on a nice day. But the bar crusher obviously handled that fine. It's got a big, big yammy on the back with all the bells and whistles, you know, cruise control and helm master and all that. So, you know, it eats that up. But then we're able to sneak around the top of the reefs, you know, in half a metre of water, Polaroiding GTs and coral trout and red bass on the electric motor while you're standing up the front of the boat. So, you know, for me, it ticked all of the boxes. We did a heavy tackle session out from Cooktown trying to catch giant marlin. We ended up losing, you know, a smaller model of one, but we did that. And then the next day we were in half a metre of water, you know, fishing up GTs and stuff. So, yeah, look, it certainly ticks all the boxes. I've since had it back in Tassie, where at the end of the season of Hook, Line and Sinker last year, we caught two trout out of it in Lake Crescent at 10-pound trout. So that was really like, right, well, it's done full circle now. It's pretty much done it all.
And to tow it up there, obviously one of the major sponsors of the show is Isuzu. And I like the fact that you take a car that hasn't had every inch of its suspension changed, it doesn't have 400 halogen lights attached to the roof. It's a ute, and that's what it is. There's not anything added to
it. Everyday person.
It's what an everyday person would drive. And you can take that to Cooktown now. You don't have to add every single bell and whistle to your car.
No. Look, I'm not a massive rev head petrol head fan anyway, so I wouldn't know what to add. But no, look, off the shelf, they are a very capable car. They tow the bar crushers, no worries. That's another thing about the bar crushers. They're just really towable and easy to use and easy to keep clean and easy to tow around. And look, I've had that D-Max in some pretty gnarly country, not with the bar crusher on it, but, four-wheel drive tracks and on the beach, and it tows it, no worries, up every ramp. It's just, you don't have to think about it. Like, it just takes you there and it's comfortable. And yeah, look, it's a good setup. The boat and the car is just a great setup to hit the road.
Hardy, now, Patrick, this sounds great, this trip, right? What stuffed up? What went wrong? There has to be 18 months.
That would be you and I. Went wrong?
You know? We need to know what went wrong. What are you doing different? What would you have any major stuff ups or anything like that you'd do different again?
I didn't drop any bar crushes this time on the boat ramp. So pretty much after that, nothing really, compares with what goes wrong. Yeah, I don't think I even broke anything. Maybe I was just being a bit too careful.
That's a terrible trip. That can't be right.
No, early on, I was trying too hard. I was putting too much pressure because, I fly in, fly out. Like, it's not like a mining job, but, if I didn't fly in, fly out, I wouldn't have a wife and kids home when I got home. So, you try and limit it to sort of a week on the road or a week to 10 days on the road and come home. I was putting too much pressure on myself early to catch fish. Once I stopped wanting to catch fish and just filming the experience and the adventure and the location, the fish came. That may sound really, really silly, but, if you were going out there chasing, for example, a big flathead from some estuary in New South Wales and you put all your eggs in that basket, it's a hard show to make if you don't catch one. Whereas if you just go, this is some beautiful estuary in New South Wales, look at that, and just have a few casts, crack a few cold ones, that's when the big fish come. So I think I just learnt to really, rather than do it as a jet set fly in, fly out trip, I really just started to enjoy it. And I think that sort of paid dividends toward the end of the trip. I was just like, yeah, should be right.
I'm sitting here shaking when he says relax. I don't think I've ever been relaxed fishing before. Well, I know how he was feeling.
I think that makes it more relatable because not every session that you go out is the greatest fishing expedition you've ever been on. But
God, no.
You hate this line, Aaron.
I do hate this line. I was waiting for it.
Going out, there's something special about it.
It's nice to be out here.
Hey, let's talk your most memorable... your three most memorable catches from your recent trip, what were they? What was something that just you wanted to tick off on this trip before you began? And 18 months later, you come home and you go, that was pretty damn special to do.
Well, one of the last fish I caught on this trip was actually at a place called, what's it called up there in the top end? East of Darwin. Anyway, somewhere up there. and I caught a juvenile Queensland groper, which I'd never landed before. So, I'd fished for 15, 20 years around the top end, barra and whatever else. And occasionally you throw your lure into a snag and you just get dusted up by a huge fish. And, your local or your guide will say, oh, it's probably one of those gropers. And I'd never caught one. I'd never seen one. And finally I hooked one sort of out a little bit off the bank and fought it for a good, probably half an hour, chasing a big Minkota. And I didn't get, I didn't see it until the very end. And sure enough, it was a big Queensland groper, which might not sound like it's a big ugly cotty thing in reality, but it was one of those species that I really wanted to catch. They're actually quite pretty when they're juvenile. They've got sort of yellow spots on
them. How big was
it?
How big was it?
Probably a metre. I don't know, maybe.
A big fish.
Yeah, sort of 15, 20 kilos maybe. A big fish. Had mud crabs spewing out of its mouth.
I would have been picking those up.
Yeah. No, they were pretty ranchers. They stink up there once they burn it. But, yeah, that was King Ash Bay. So that was a great trip. The trout that I mentioned, they were good. So I actually had a mate of mine who lives in Melbourne make some little lures out of, you know, he whittled them out of wood and flew him down here. And we caught some, yeah, very, very big trout on those lures, which was a highlight. And the third fish would have to be the giant trevallies that we were catching in sort of up on top of the flats of the Great Barrier Reef. That stuff's insane. Like, I've caught GTs before on poppers where you sort of, you know, cruise along the deeper edges of the reefs. But yeah, that fishing on top of Barrier Reef is absolutely world class.
Can I give you mine? I'm going to give you one slightly different, but one of the fish that, for some reason, I've caught one before, but it's still on my bucket list. You caught a beautiful Saratoga. There's something about Saratoga that I think is just, it's prehistoric in a sense, and you caught some beautiful fish as well.
Yeah, that was a special day because we took ourselves off to a little lagoon that we've never fished in Kakadu, and, you know, dropped the big bar crusher, that's the wrong word, put the big bar crusher in, you know, and... And just sort of started exploring up the edges of this lagoon, and I think we caught a nice barra. And then, as it turned out, there was lots and lots of Saratoga, and they're a great fish. They're a difficult fish to get the hooks into. So you generally, you know, if you're using say a little soft plastic or something, you'll see them hit it because the water was quite clear. But getting the hooks in was kind of difficult. They got a very bony mouth.
And is that because that big bottom jaw as well? Like it's almost a hooked jaw.
Yeah, I guess it is. I think they're pretty crap at eating because I've sort of tried to catch them on like surface lures and like scum frogs and flies and things, you know, under the water lilies. And they just charge at it and I think they eat without thinking too much. I think they're just bad at getting the food in their mouth. But when you do,
sounds like my kids.
They fight all right. They don't fight as well as a barra. But there is something special about them with their colours and those big scales and those little cat-like whiskers under their chin. They're a beautiful fish. They certainly, you know, everyone says they're a prehistoric fish, and they certainly are. They look like not a lot of other species that we have in Australia.
Take us back to Tassie now. You've got sitting probably in the sheds the new project boat. It's finally on the water. Take us through the process with that, and what do you plan to do with it?
So, yeah, it's actually living on Flinders Island, which is, you know, Nick Dygan's other home away from home. The member's other home from home. And the member and myself actually launched the boat out of Bridport on the North Coast a few months ago now. And we set track for Flinders Island. We sent the trailer over on the barge. And we had an awesome island hopping day. I think it was like 50-odd nautical miles. And caught fish, and yeah, look, it's living over there catching giant crayfish and kingfish and snapper and that sort of thing. But it's probably, that's sort of where we made the boat for, so we decided to, instead of doing an old project boat this year, we'd do a new one.
was it nice to have something where everything's just perfect, and it's nothing against the process of a project boat, because there is a...
No, it is heaps against it, because they are pricks to do, especially glass. It moves, it carries on.
Oh, I can't tell you how nice it was not to have some sort of disaster, particularly after the last one, because the last one was, I think, or maybe the one before, was a Pride Sea Raider, like an old...
Yes.
Caribbean.
That's what I grew up in. I grew up in a Pride. That's what my old man had.
It's a good boat.
It was a good boat.
It's a great boat. It's actually still, it's living locally to me. It's the guy from the local pub board. and it goes beautifully, but my God, we had some issues. So when we bought it, it was the start of COVID. So we had some glasswork done on it in Victoria before bringing it back to Tassie. We were told it had 200 litres of fuel under the floor. Turned out it had 80. So then we had to recut up the, you know, beautiful floor that had been done. And we tried to fix it by adding a plastic fuel tank and then re-glassing the floor. And then that failed. And then we had to cut it up for a third time and just bite the bullet and put a new fuel tank in it. And finally it was fixed. But, you know, this is over a process of 6 or 8 months. And, you know, fiberglass guys are never very fast at doing their jobs. They're all crazy because they've been sucking in so many fumes and whatever
for
else.
For years.
it's just like, oh, God, what else can go wrong? But no, look, this year we just thought, let's put the newest stuff from Yamaha, so the Helmmaster, the joystick and, you know, the electric digital steering on the twin outboards, and put it on a new boat. They build the boats locally here in Tassie. It's sort of a rip-off of a Haynes V19R. They've kind of extended it out to 21 foot. Fairly customizable, I guess. So we just decided to build more or less a work boat with a big sort of working area, wave breaker, and that was it. And twin 175s on the back. And no, it went like a rocket.
Would have. Twin 175s.
I was going to say, yeah. It's not that Spartan, though. When you've got this beautiful sort of plush leather-looking cream seats, like it
that
was
a member's short. Does that surprise you that that was a member's short?
Was there a red carpet walking down the middle?
Yeah. It was sort of your Riviera sort of flybridge sort of seat that
you went sort of with. It's sort of the look and feel that he goes for these days. It's like, God.
Changed man, Nick, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a changed man. They're good seats because they, you know, they flip from one side to the other, so you can be sitting on it facing forward, and then the backrest actually flips, so you can be sitting on it facing back, looking at your rods. Quite clever.
Oh,
didn't mind
that.
Those. Yes. Hated them when they first turned up. I thought, what the hell are they? But they were actually quite practical. The other thing we put on it was a cray pot hauler. Now, I've never thought you really need one, and you know, at the cost of what they are, they're sort of several thousand dollars. But God, that makes cray potting fun.
You know, because you don't have to pull them up.
No, I was going to say there's a bit of a difference though with the size crays that you get in Tassie compared to just about everywhere else in the country. You do need a cray pot hauler to get the bloody things up.
To haul them up, yeah, maybe. But yeah, it makes it enjoyable in that you can. Well, it actually makes you catch more fish because you pot deeper water, which is probably been less potted, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
you're sort of potting 20 to 30 metre water. And I've been told by a cray fisherman mate, like a pro, that if you're pulling them up by hand from that depth, it gives them the chance to get it out. So I don't know whether that's true or not. Whereas if you use your hauler, you know, it's coming
it's
up at
constant.
A rate of knots and they can't get up. Yeah,
My crays would die of old age as I'm pulling it up, Pat. they wouldn't get out. Yeah. They would die.
I reckon you would die before they did
die. Yeah,
Hardy, yeah. What can we look forward to for this year for hook, line and sinker? What have you got in store for us?
An excellent question. I'm just waiting for the kids to go back to school and start down a plan. But no, look, I've got a new bar crusher coming. So I've got the 780, the big one coming, with a windscreen this time. So the big hardtop. So that'll be, you know, some adventures in that. I'll probably bring it back to Tassie to start with, before putting it on the road. And, might look to even do some sort of, you know, not a circumnavigation, but sort of fish my way around Tassie. And then mix that in with some trips on the road. You know, any ideas are welcome, basically.
Might be time for you to take him.
I was about to say, any ideas,
locally, Aaron?
Do you need myself? I'll come on the trip.
Yeah, let's go. Let's just work it out. We'll go and do it. You know, as it gets colder, I'll go further north, I guess.
Smart plan.
So, it's definitely happening, but I haven't given it too much thought yet. I just want to get those kids back to school and then I'll get into it.
Perfect. Sounds good.
Hardy, thanks again for your time this morning. We always love chatting hook, line and sinker and the fun that you have on your show. That's easy to see, and I think it's why certainly viewers relate to it as we do. Thanks for your time on Real Adventures this morning.
Thanks, guys.